I have a bright green bicycle. I like to ride it fast all over town. Every time I meet a pretty girl, she says she's seen me riding around. I go fast, but I'm in no hurry. I just like to feel the wind rushing through my hair. As I fly down the road, I see an old friend. I'll stop and talk a while. I don't care.
Hello, and welcome to this month's episode of the Portland Afoot Commuting Podcast about buses, bikes, and low-car life in PDX. I'm Lillian, your producer.
And I'm Michael, Portland Afoot's editor. Each month, Lillian and I bring you three practical bits of news that matter to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we give it to you in the time that it takes the average Portlander to get to work. This month, we're talking about the new frontiers of car-like technology, including buying TriMet fare with your phone, driving a car with your computer, and the long-awaited Portland bike share system.
And today we're also joined by Rob Sadowski, one of the most expert bike experts in town, the executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance.
How are you guys doing?
Rob, you're kind of a foodie. The last time I heard you on a podcast was on our friends at the Sprocket podcast, and you were talking about sausage making, metaphorical and literal, and now you've convinced us to consume.
Today we're actually joined by three glasses of Rob's expert recipe for the transportini, which we'll post up on the blog when this goes up.
We do suggest that you pour yourself a cold one before you listen to the podcast.
Definitely. Otherwise, you will feel jealous of us.
Although, not on TriMet.
Yes, that's right. And today we'll also share some of our favorite Twitter chatter about TriMet, and I'll read a funny story that I heard happened on the bus.
Enjoy listening.
I like to ride it fast all over town. Every time I meet a pretty girl, she says she's seen me riding around.
Bike sharing.
So any day now, the city of Portland is about to have a bike sharing system rolled out.
They're going to announce the winner of the bid that they put out, and somebody's going to come up with a plan, and it's going to solve all our problems, and it's going to be great. A bike sharing system, we've talked about this a couple times on the show. It's sort of like those carts you see at airports sometimes where you put in a quarter and you check out a cart, only instead of a quarter, you're just going to flash your card. You're going to get a card for the system, probably, and then
you... By flash your card, you mean put your credit card into a machine.
You're going to transact in some way with the machine, yeah. And if you can become a member either for a day or a week or a month or a year, something like that. And then once you're a member, you can get a free ride for 30 minutes in almost all of these systems. And you can pay if you want to use a bike for longer. And you take it from station to station and drop it between these stations. And so the interesting thing about that, I think, is that it means that unlike most bike projects that Portland pursues, it actually isn't mostly for people who are really into bicycling. The people who benefit the most from this are people who are not so much into bicycling, but are into things like carpooling and transit and walking, and they just want to use a supplementary way to get around sometimes. Does that sound right to you guys?
Well, yeah, definitely, because they're giant, heavy bicycles. So
right, you wouldn't want to go very far with them.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't want to go far, but one of the things that we're seeing across the world is that people use them for different reasons. When they started out, they thought they would be just for tourists. And all of a sudden, the people who were using it were people going on lunch breaks. And instead of just, you know, walking to the restaurant down the street, were stretching their restaurant breaks doing errands on their trip. And in some cases, they thought it was just going to be for commuting and then expanded into tourism. So it could be for anything and anyone. And it's for people who ride bikes, too. Let's say you regularly ride a bike, but you don't bring your bike downtown because you take transit. And there's that bike sitting there, and you want to go do something, and you can cut your time by half more instead of walking, or sorry to be an apologetic thing around streetcar, but you certainly can get there faster than streetcar.
That's right.
Sorry, Chris Smith.
Yeah. Even if you drove in from Malala, if you're driving to downtown, you're not going to want to take your car to go somewhere else downtown. It's a huge hassle. You want to get on a bike for just that lunch run to the pizza place or whatever.
Yeah, so companies, small businesses, are finding that it's been really helpful to have a station near them. It attracts people. They get off the station, they're putting, just like having transit center near it, you're putting your bike away and you're locking into your system, and you look up and you say, oh, there's a bar there, let's go there, or oh, there's a shop I've never been to. And it creates this local economy that's really successful, really positive, and it ties to this really wonderful feeling of riding a bike.
So both of you guys have been on these systems. I haven't been out of Portland since these took over the world, and they really have taken over the world, basically, except for the West Coast.
So we should let you out.
Yeah.
I have tried the system in Lyon, France. I've tried it in Munich and Berlin, and I've also tried the Washington, D.C. system, the Minneapolis system. There's little differences between each system, but basically the way you described it, I would actually compare it to transit. Mm-hmm. You swipe a card just like you swipe your card to get into transit if you had a unified fare system, which we'll talk about maybe in a little bit when we get into that. And then unlike a car rental or unlike Zipcar, you don't have to return the bike to the same station that you checked it out. You can return it to any station.
Right.
So it's like get around for
Car2Go.
You know? Or Car2Go. Car2Go. Yeah. It's like Car2Go for bikes.
It's very much like Car2Go for bikes.
Something I found interesting is this really did, as someone who was half transit rider and half bike rider in Berlin because I lived out in the suburbs. So, and it costs money to take your bike on the train in Berlin. You have to pay kind of a substantial amount. It's about $2 for each ride that your bike comes on. So there's this huge disincentive to bringing your bike into the center of town. Mm-hmm. And they have a call-a-bike system there, which is a little different. You actually call in with your cell phone or text in to check out your bikes on the bike share system there rather than putting your credit card in.
And that's truly more like Car2Go because you never know where it's going to be. Where the bike system
is
in New York.
They do have stations in Berlin, and they're like, they're plugged into the call-a-bike stations.
Do they have hills in Berlin?
No.
That seems like the biggest problem with bike sharing. I bet that's why they don't have it in Seattle yet.
Lyon has a lot of hills.
And Paris has hills.
They balance it out.
Yeah.
So you have to have people on staff who can take the bikes from the bottom of the hill to the top of the hill. Right. Or create economic incentives. So if you return a bike to one that's on the top of the hill, maybe you get X number of minutes free.
Right.
So that's something. One of the potential bidders who ended up not bidding for the Portland is something called Social Bikes, and they have a system that's more like Holobike in Germany, where you don't have a locking system. The bike and the lock stay with you with some GPS systems, uh-huh. and then you could just, like Car2Go, leave it anywhere. The nice thing about that is you don't have as much infrastructure expenses.
Right.
The problem, though, is it's not as reliable. You don't know where you're going to find a bike, whereas in Washington, D.C., you pick up your phone, you find it. Yeah, you can pick up your phone and see where the nearest bike is, but what happens by the time you walk there if that bike's not there?
Right.
This is something I found in Berlin is if you didn't know the city, I found call-a-bike wasn't that useful because, unfortunately, it needs to be paired to be useful for tourists or for people that aren't super familiar with the city. You really need to know what your trade-offs between transit and biking are. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at, like, the S-Bahn map in Berlin, you know, it looks like every station is equidistant from each other. And that, oh, well, there's, you know, there's only three stops there to get to this station or something. But once you actually learn about the city, you realize that some of these stations only have 100 meters between them, and then some of them have 5 miles. And so knowing the difference between, like, oh, it's much faster for me to bike between these two stations, or it's worth it for me to transfer twice, was really essential. Hmm. Whereas both in Guadalajara and in Paris, I found the Guadalajara system is, you know, kind of much more rudimentary, but has great signage and really good maps because it's entirely reliant on private funding and businesses. So, like, good maps are essential, so you know where to find the businesses that have these. And they had great signage, so even as someone who didn't speak Spanish and didn't know the city of Guadalajara, I was really able to figure out when I should walk or when I should bike. Valib in Paris, their tactic is to just completely blanket the city. Like, you hear about how many bikes they have, but that number doesn't really catch you until you're there and you realize that Paris is a really tiny city, and it's a really tiny city with, what is it, like 40,000?
60,000.
60,000 bicycles? Like, there is literally Valib, things one block away from Valib things, and each of them have, like, 50-plus bikes on them.
Wow.
Hongqiao has something like 100,000 bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's astonishing. Well, and China is really picking up on bike sharing now. But
one of the things that I like about Call-a-Bike, which is intriguing to me, is that it's run by the same people that run transit. Yeah. So it's Deutsche Bahn who does the system. If you look at bike sharing as a transit system, it really makes sense. Maybe this is something that in long term should be managed not by the Bureau of Transportation, but by TriMet.
Interesting.
I mean, also, I will note that Deutsche Bahn is the European equivalent of a Fortune 500 company and also runs a lot of things in the country. So their kind of force out into other industries is partially just the fact that they have a ton of money and they can sort of choose to do that. But it is a really good last mile solution for Berlin. But Deutsche Bahn covers much even outside of Germany.
Yeah.
So it's a huge, it runs long distance as well as inner city rail.
I want to talk about problems with bike sharing. One of which seems to me, this is something that's been raised obviously in the past, but like I was saying, you need to have an account, and that means basically, for the most part, you have to have a bank account and or a credit card. You have to pay in advance for this, or you have to be able to whip out your credit card and buy a membership on the spot. And 10% of the population, the poorest 10% of the population, doesn't have a bank account or a credit card. And they're the ones who need bike sharing the most. They're the ones who, like, are, if they're downtown, have been using the Free Rail Zone or the Fareless Square, and that's all gone. So this is, like, the new Fareless Square on bikes, which is awesome if everybody can use it.
There are a lot of equity issues. The way that we're looking to address that in Portland is similar to the way that other cities are starting to look at, which is partnering with social service agencies, particularly community development corporations that have affordable housing projects, to find ways to link these FOBs, which are the keys that access it, that they can either be checked out, but somehow there's a responsible party for potential damages or theft. And that's one of the tricks there. The city is also applying for some grant money that could be used to provide free FOBs to low-income people based on certain criteria. However, it's not going to reach everyone, and that's not what it's meant to be. In some ways, it's like streetcar. It's more about creating this new economic incentive, this new moving people around to restaurants. You're not expecting it to you can't get home with it because it's going to be in a locked station. Mm-hmm. So it's not the kind of thing that you can go to your house to your work, but you might be able to go from transit to near your work. So there needs to be other equity components to it. To me, the biggest equity component is there's new jobs. If there are going to be 750 bikes across the city, these are opportunities to create jobs in there. People who can maintain those, clean them, clean the systems, move and balance the system. All those new jobs should be integrated into our social service system so that those are new jobs that are trained by nonprofits here that are working on job development.
Okay. And we should say in that these jobs are not going to be taxpayer-funded. They're going to be funded by, after this initial outlay, the plan is that it's going to be funded by basically advertisers who are going to buy marketing through the system. They're going to sponsor the system in some way and get marketing from it.
Half the funding from the initial is coming from federal transportation dollars, and half is coming from private investment now.
Right.
And that's for the initial system.
This is just the startup.
We don't know what the future will be.
Okay.
The future might include additional investments from federal government. If there's opportunities there, why wouldn't we go out and try to expand it through that? So there may be government dollars in there. What we found in Washington, D.C. is that it's been so popular that there have been opportunities both for increased sponsorship as well as private dollars from new cities and public dollars from cities like Arlington, who says, I want it. I want that advantage. So you might see expansion into the system from investment from, say, a Beaverton or a Hillsborough from that transit center. There are lots of opportunities. I wouldn't say outright there's never going to be another piece of private public dollars in it. I don't think that's the right way to approach it. But we do want to look and see, does it work? How does it work? And what can we learn from it?
People say that a lot of the problem with this is that people are stealing the bikes. And, you know, some bikes are going to be stolen.
That hasn't really been nearly as much of a problem in recent years.
There were initial set of problems with theft in Paris that has been resolved, and they haven't had that problem since. But there was a couple articles that got picked up, and then people still quote it as if it happened yesterday. There's two things that you should build into the system. You should build in costs for theft, and you should build in equity in terms of locations. Hmm. So yes, if you want to build one that has the highest use, you're going to do it in a central business district. But if you know that it should reach everyone, then you're going to be looking at buildings and locations that are really important destinations. That might include public aid offices. It might include county buildings. It might include jail, places which have lots of opportunities and places to go to.
And that's why we're spending public dollars on it in the first place. If it were such a great idea, then the private sector could do it. That was Amanda Fritz's question, right?
Okay, so does that apply to transit?
I think it could. Transit, I think,
you think transit, can sustain
transit
itself?
Has a lot of other values.
But
right?
there's almost no transit system in the world that's supported entirely by private funds. So why would you imply something that's primarily
You could have a profitable transit system, it would just be a crappy transit system.
I'm implying that if you approach bike sharing as an extension of the transit system, particularly for the last mile, that there's a public opportunity there. In addition to that, it's like streetcar, it's going to drive some economic opportunity. It makes sense to put some public investment in it.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to talk about helmets?
Helmets on bike share, or
helmets on bike share. I think this is a really interesting question because they're not going to be including helmets.
Absolutely
with the bike share.
For sure, we know that.
It's just too challenging,
first of all,
right?
Very clearly, our state does not require people to wear helmets, so there's no requirement over the age of 16.
Who won't have a credit card, so they wouldn't be able to. Right. If they're under the age of 16.
So that's one reality. Number two is most of these trips are going to be really short. They're certainly going to be less than half an hour. And the bikes are slow, so they have a little less risk incorporated into them. And it's a reality that people aren't going to be carrying their helmets around. There may be some opportunities, and we'll be looking at them, including a vending machine that can kick out a helmet. Each of the companies have been asked to try to address it. I'd be surprised if it's done in a way that's affordable, but who knows? The other problem we have is...
Would that be an add-on for the... If you
I
want to
buy a helmet out of a vending machine.
You can, for a dollar or something, you can rent a helmet, and it would and somehow it would sanitize it. That's what they're trying to do in Seattle. One of the other problems is, in order to make those kind of things work, you need to be able to advertise on the vending machine. Mm-hmm. And if it's in public space in Portland, there's limits on what you can advertise on.
Right.
So, is there currently anywhere that requires a helmet that has a bike sharing system? There's 33 cities in the states that have bike sharing systems in the works
33?
At the moment right now. There's 22 that have them currently, and then there's like 11 more that are in process.
So, the answer, I don't believe so, but I think there is one in Australia.
Okay, all right. Is that in Melbourne?
Maybe.
Okay.
I should know that.
Or Melbourne, since I'm American.
And there's been some concerns about its usage. Yeah.
You're in this, like, nefarious group of elites who are trying to plan bike sharing. Like, you've got some organization that I don't fully understand that's like, we're here to support bike sharing and be a liaison to various things. And I've heard explanations of it, but I want to hear what your description of what this group's going to do.
So the concept came from Rick Gustafson from Streetcar and said, let's use the same model that we use at Streetcar. Let's create a nonprofit company that would manage the whole system and then provide opportunity for citizen involvement, as well as some of the companies that might come in as sponsors and the government to come in and have a role to play. So it's not just the city that's managing that contract.
Right. Well, that's alternative is a city, which would have more public involvement, right?
Well, except
like Streetcar Board doesn't, their meetings are private.
Have you seen a publicly involved process in the city that you're proud of?
So yeah, the city could choose to do that, right? Mm-hmm. It certainly could. And that would be great. We have that system, an open system of where that goes. So what we said is, let's create this nonprofit that can play that role. And we went to, we went around, had some conversations with some potential vendors. Alta Bike Share, which is a partner with Bixi, came in and said, we'd like to partner with you. And we said, okay. And we're in that proposal. The idea is that we would basically provide some framework, some citizen involvement and engagement piece, and be able to help extend the project beyond the city Portland boundaries. So that's one of the issues. If it's just a Portland project, what happens when we want to expand to Hillsborough? Do you create a second government process?
Right.
And
this creates
something. So you're creating the metro of bike sharing. Only without public elected officials.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways trying to create potentially a TriMet. It could be quasi-private public system.
TriMet without payroll taxes of bike sharing.
There you go.
Yes, and with a heck of a lot less staff.
Right.
All right.
Right. Okay, great.
Well, I think that wraps up all I want to talk about bike sharing.
Great. Well,
I propose that we open the window for a little bit, take a little break, and pour ourselves more transportinis.
Oh, that's a great idea.
All right, so we're going to take a transportini break. We'll be right back talking about self-driving cars.
And it's okay if you're listening to take a transportini break.
Yes, yes. We endorse it. We also want to talk about a word from our sponsor. And our sponsor this week is Portland Afoot's amazing Kickstarter project, guys. This is very exciting. Portland Afoot is doing a Kickstarter project. So we are going to... I'm breaking the news to you guys. For the first time.
Can we tell anybody?
Just Rob. You cannot tell anybody until this podcast is on the air, because by then it'll be open. But the project we're doing is we're going to create an app version of Portland Afoot. It's going to be a Portland Afoot for your mobile. Just the way it's customized to paper, it's going to be customized to a mobile phone. It's going to be just as simple and cheap and free. It'll be totally free.
How are you going to do the origami version?
The origami will have to go by the wayside. We're going to have to find new interesting things to do with Portland Afoot, and we will.
What about holographic, like...
Definitely on the way.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that would work.
That's a good one.
All right. There are going to be holograms in this. That'll be a reach goal. A stretch goal. You got to check this out. It's at pdx.be/lowcarapp, LOWCARAPP, and you can check out the amazing prizes. There are some awesome ones you've got to read to believe.
Including Michael biking your name through the streets of Portland.
Yes, Lily recording a message on your home answering voicemail.
At varying levels of sultriness.
One through ten. Yeah.
Wes doing an interpretive dance for you.
Of your life.
Yeah. There's some really great prizes on there. You should check it out. pdx.be/lowcarapp. Nice.
Thanks. That's our sponsor. We're going to move on, though, to our second news topic, and that is, to Rob's chagrin, self-driving cars. I am fascinated by this. Rob says, and I'm going to quote from Rob's email exchange about this. Really? Okay, but really? That's Rob's thoughts about self-driving cars. Exactly. We want to talk to the head of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance about self-driving cars. And I'll tell you why. The self-driving car is getting better so much faster than you expect it. Like, there's a piece in Wired this January. 2 years ago, this guy had driven in the best self-driving car. It was going 25 miles per hour, 2 blocks, closed streets. It stopped at a stop sign. That was very impressive.
And it was like, oh my God, I cannot believe this car drove 2 blocks.
Exactly.
And now, in 2011, it's going 70 miles per hour on a busy highway.
With all the humans surrounding it, and it's not killing the humans yet.
Yeah. Yet.
So, my main argument for this is that we need to stop. This is a discussion for Radiolab, not for the Portland Afoot podcast, on whether or not machines or humans have better judgment in traffic conditions.
Sort of a meta-argument.
However, I do believe that, coming up with a set of rules and imbuing a knowledge of physics into someone, be them human or machine, makes them a much better driver. Because in Germany, I found with the very, very highly trained drivers, they were a lot more aware of stopping distance and following distance and all sorts of things that drivers in the States, depending on which state you got licensed to drive in, you have in terms of education. And if you put that in as a rule, and with adjustments, like you can with any program,
exactly,
you're going to end up with a better driver.
You're saying machines are better than humans.
No, I'm saying machines are better at judging physical distance as well as following a set of if and and rules than humans.
Haven't you read the last 40 years of science fiction?
You're saying Skynet's going to kill us?
No, that machines are fallible. Uh-huh. Just as humans are fallible. And we have to trust whether humans or machines are more or less fallible. If I'm arriving at an intersection, I can look someone in the eye and see whether they're looking at me. Will I be able to look at a machine, a car that's driven by a machine, and determine whether they've even seen me?
No.
So it's going to scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, but you're going to be wrong, because the machine is going to see you.
I'm not going to figure it out unless there's indicators. I have seen you. Rob.
But think about how many things in your daily transportation life are controlled by machines. The signals on the Macs are controlled by machines. The traffic lights are controlled by machines.
That was once done by a human. There was a human waving a flag once upon a time.
Continue.
Ultimately, there's a human on that train responsible for looking to make sure that someone isn't in the way. And yes, they make mistakes, but there's a backup system. Is there going to be a backup system? Can you override the system? Will there be enough time to override the system? And actually, the center of my issue is we shouldn't be looking at creating more creative ways for people to drive, but getting ways for us to get out of our cars, become more physically active, not less active.
And I think these are completely complementary goals. The thing about self-driving cars is actually right now the law
you gotta put a treadmill inside the car so that you can work out while driving the car.
Once we have the laws that are there in place right now say you have to have a human in the car whenever it's driving, but the key is going to be when we get beyond that, when we can say the car does not have to the car can come to you. And once the car can come to you, that means that car ownership is completely, the biggest thing about car ownership is reliability of knowing the car is going to be where you want it to be. And if you can call a car at any time, then suddenly, the need to own a car becomes far, far lower. It's going to be like Car2Go, where, you can pick up
a car that's super reliable and super cheap that is called a bicycle.
It's not a car. It's not the same thing. It's a different function. There are going to be different people who use it, and there are going to be different needs. But here's the thing is that it's all going to be pay-as-you-go, right? Unlike the car, which is an all-you-can-eat buffet of carness, this is all. This is going to make it possible for so many more people. 1% of the population uses car sharing now. This is going to be like the mega grand explosion of car sharing because they're going to be like at least half of the population is going to be able to do this.
So time out. It's interesting. It's intriguing. But if we just simply designed our cities to be more walkable and bikeable, we wouldn't need to have this conversation.
No, this is going to facilitate walkable and bikeable cities.
No. It's going to make it so it's irrelevant.
No,
everybody's going to be multimodal because there are going to be all these 50% of the people are going to be looking at the rational way to get around all of a sudden. They're going to be thinking, do I need to get this car? No, I don't need to. I can get my bike right now.
I think your fetishization of the self-driving car, like, clouds your ability to, like, recognize that people are going to be really freaked out by this.
Yeah,
like,
that's a non-argument.
No.
People are freaked out by everything.
That's true.
That's not true.
That is true.
It's not true. People are not freaked out by everything.
People were freaked out by telephones, hon.
Yeah, that's true. See?
Yeah.
There is an element of our society which is really intrigued by that next technology, that is excited by that technology, that's really geeked out by
it.
Yes,
all these
But technology is rarely, if ever, the answer.
Nor has it rarely...
No, it's the only answer.
Cell phone technology.
There's nothing new.
Has made your life so much simpler. In fact, you have so much more time to do things because of cell phone technology.
It's made my life much more efficient. I don't have to plan anything in advance. It's great.
You spend...
This is Michael's own particular need with cell phone technology.
To not plan. I would be completely incompetent.
My family would say that if cell phone technology was not in our household, we would have a better household.
That's a different question.
Yeah. I would stare less at a screen. I would be more engaged in other things. There are elements to technology that are both positive and elements that are negative and how we manage that.
I think you can't... I mean, it's just like this argument that, like, if you build it, they will come. I think you're applying to self-driving cars. And I think there has to be an incredibly strong, motivated private sector push towards getting these self-driving cars to be an acceptable thing, which there was with telephones.
Yeah.
And additionally, you need to have the infrastructure in place to make it okay for people to live without their cars, even if they have a call.
That's what I'm saying. This is how we'll get political pressure to do that.
No. You cannot say this technology that is currently very far off from being in wide implementation is the way to get a walkable and bikeable
community. No, I'm saying it's not going to hurt. I'm saying it's going to make it possible. It's going to be better. We should be making the walkable and bikeable community now so that we can increase the possibility that a low-car life is possible in this world that we're going to create that doesn't require car ownership.
But if we don't have the car... Not that I'm advocating for a car-free society, but the more cars that we have, the greater chance of fatality. And so I don't want to look at a solution that puts more cars out there. I want less cars out there.
There will be less cars out
Michael
there.
Michael thinks there's going to be less there cars because there'll be less private car ownership. Right.
If it becomes easier for people to take that as a choice, you're not reducing the trips. You're just reducing the number of cars. The trips.
Right. When we're going to reduce the trips because what's right now the fixed cost is going to be put in the marginal cost, right? So the fixed cost of owning
economics.
A car is going to be
But if your marginal cost, okay, so you're saying your marginal cost is higher.
Lily's
an
economics major.
Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't go into this then. But you're trying to argue that the cost, the marginal cost, the cost per trip will be higher.
Right.
But the fixed cost will be lower.
Exactly.
We'll
all save money. We'll all be able to use cars as much as we want, and we'll all be making rational choices about when to use bikes and trips.
I need proof that the marginal cost is going
to
be higher.
Will I be able to take this vehicle to Chicago?
No. Do something else to Chicago. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't take it to Chicago, right?
No, because in Michael's fantasy future, we're going to have high-speed rail to Chicago because of the self-driving cars.
I'm really looking forward to
that. So then you won't have to deal with
that. That's an excellent point.
Yeah. So Michael's creating this awesome reality where self-driving cars are this just great accent to it. But you can't, like this is my argument. You cannot view self-driving cars as part of the solution. You can view them as part of the end result. That might be interesting, but they are certainly not the way to get there.
I have one other argument to make, but Rob, you want to say something else?
I just worry about the sexy technological solution when we do have simple solutions out there that aren't about the car or the bike, but the way we design our communities. And until we stop building suburban communities that are unable to walk, until we start looking at rethinking the way that we design our communities, we're not going to be getting there either way.
Okay. No, I think that's correct, and that's essential.
All right. As much as I want to geek out with you two about this, I think most of our audience is probably ready to talk about more exciting, less controversial things, which is buying TriNet fares with your phone.
That's true.
So, Michael, will you give me the lowdown on this?
The Oregonian reported this month that the local company Transit Sherpa is about to ink.
Hold on, hold up. Transit Sherpa?
Transit Sherpa. Seriously? Actually, that's not their full. That's only one of their products.
They named themselves after a dog with transit.
No. After actually, the person that climbs up Mount Everest,
Transit
never
Sherpa
gets credit
the product,
for it.
But the the company.
All right. Well, that's pretty apt. All right, moving along. Transit Sherpa.
This company is climbing the mountain of making your fares easier to buy without having to have a freaking correct change or a working TVM vending machine for it to buy a ticket. You are just going to be able to whip out your phone and buy a ticket while you're waiting for the max on the platform, or even better, at the bus stop, so you don't have to have correct change for the bus driver. It's fantastic. And if
so, this is really good.
Yeah,
because the ticket machines that never work on the max will sort of be a moot point.
Be, right, yeah, you just have to have a fully charged phone.
Which, the bad news is that when you're at the courthouse for TriNet Tuesdays, you'll no longer be able to attempt to use that as an excuse.
That's true.
For so why you got a fare.
Walk this through. I just show a picture on my phone to the inspector so they know right. that I bought the fare.
And they've got their own instance of the app, so they've got a nice special inspector version of the app that then, like, scans your
version color?
Of the app. Yes, exactly.
So that shows that you didn't, like,
right.
use it so, multiple times?
Right. What's you get a unique ID every time you buy a fare, and it probably creates a barcode or something, and then they scan that barcode, and they say, oh, this was created for this one person at this one time, and then they say it's great.
It would be really great if it was idiot-proof, because one of the things I can never figure out whether I'm a 1, 2, or 3 zone fare.
Well, that's going to be eliminated because we don't have zones anymore after September 1st.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. That's right.
The other thing that will be really important, I think, for any of these systems to work is that it has to be integrated. I want that same app to work for Zipcar, Car2Go, and the new bike share system.
I said the same thing to the Transit Sherpa CEO dude, and he said, we are just focused on transit right now.
Sherpa dude, like, it's not an oxymoron. What's it when the same word?
Sherpa dude.
Sherpa dude.
Sherpa dude says that they don't have time to worry about that crap right now. But okay. I totally agree.
They don't have... Well, I'm interesting, because it's not RFID compatible. Now we are techno-geeking out.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the technology.
Can you wave it in front of the Zipcar? No.
He's hoping so. So he's the new. It depends on the new iPhone. Here's what he said. The new iPhone, everybody's expecting to have RFID capacity. This is like a
that
chip
actually
in the
might
iPhone
even
that,
get
like,
me to buy a new iPhone.
I know. That's why I'm not buying a phone right now. Because this is going to be huge. You're going to be able to hover your
Damn
phone
you
near
Steve
things
Jobs.
And buy things. Exactly. anyway, he thinks that that's going to be included in the new iPhone this fall, and that will be a big part of their decision making about where to take the product as well.
Interesting. Oh.
So
I'm all for that.
So in theory, if you're on the max.
Yes.
And an inspector came on and you're in the back of the car.
Walks on this
you could buy a fare right then and there. Not if you have a BlackBerry like I do, because it would probably take longer than it would take for the inspector to get back where you're at.
That's right. You have to type the URL with your fingers.
Now, if we can get free Wi-Fi to go with it,
yeah,
and really make transit exciting,
yeah,
and
so
easier to
my son
your
was
fare.
Just reading something about a pair of shoes that detects whether you're in the pair of shoes or not, and that's linked with your house, that can then operate as a key. So if they just like those
you personally
car,
are in the
like
shoes?
The keyless car.
So if somebody steals my shoes,
if they steal your shoes and then try to get in your house, it won't work because the shoes. Know that Michael Anderson is in the shoes.
Right.
And then the shoes act as a key.
See, Michael actually really needs his shoes. Only the problem is he doesn't tie his shoes before he leaves his house.
No, well, they can make them Velcro. I'm thinking, here you go, have a pair of shoes that as soon as you enter either a bus or TriMet will know that you entered it and buy the fare.
I'm for that.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, what about the shoeless? You're not thinking about the shoeless, Rob.
Are these...
The shoeless...
Yeah. Well, there's also...
The Google Glasses, maybe they'll have
yeah. them. I mean, there's also really cool Bluetooth shoes now that that lead
That's
blind...
That's easy for you to
that,
say.
Well, that lead blind people. So they're able to tell you when your next turn is and everything. When
and
you're
buy
approaching
your fare.
The turn. And buy right, your right. transit fare.
Yeah. In the like, future, we won't need to spend anything. The corporations will spend our money for us.
Yes. All right. Michael.
Yeah.
Other than buying your... Soon to be buying your fare on your phone... What's your commuting tip of the month?
My commuting tip of the month, Lily, is that the coolest seat on the MAX, literally, here we are in August, the coolest seat on the MAX is the raised section at the end of the new Type 4 trains. You know, this kind that came out in 2004. There's actually a permanent draft in those. It's not by design. That's by accident. There is a malfunction in the air circulation system that caused this draft. But it means there's a draft up in the MAX on the higher... parts of those Type 4s, so you should definitely sit in those Type 4s because it's going to be the best place to sit in the hot weather.
I totally get your drift on that.
On buses, you just need to sit near the front.
All
right. Lily, do you have some TriMet tweets?
I have a couple. I wanna say that this was sadly sort of a sad month for TriMet tweets. It seemed to be pretty negative. I always try to find some positive tweets to throw in there, despite my not necessarily transit-loving self, but unfortunately, it was a kind of negative month. So, Dr. Jeff says, dude and his 7-year-old kid with matching energy drink hats, what's a word for when you're touched and repulsed at the same time?
I remember that. I like that one.
TriMet Scanner. There will be no attempt to put trains back on time, since Obama will screw it up again at 6 p.m., says controller. This dude, Abides, who's a new TriMet tweeter, as far as I can tell, I had just started to forget about another 9 rider who had been picking her nose like she was digging for treasure.
Lily obviously hasn't seen The Big Lebowski.
Sorry. So I not, have. I true. Have, but it's a long time ago.
I don't get the excitement over that movie.
I've got nothing to say to you people.
A man waiting for the 79 turns to his dog and says, you know, I could leave you here, but I know you just chased the bus. Pepita Junk says, when the MAX operator is telling you it would probably be faster to walk, you know there's a problem. Michael, do you have an only on the bus for us?
I do. This story is told by Brandon. He was writing the TriMet Red Line. And he's actually not from here. This is going in our travel issue, our new issue. He's from traveling to Portland from out of town. Here's what he says. My dad's from Portland originally. I cover high school and college football for FoxSports.com, based in Seattle. And I am probably traveling 2 weekends out of the month. I was in town for the opening of a Nike football camp, riding to Beaverton from the airport. This was actually the first time I've ever ridden the TriMet. I was sitting in the very first seat behind the little rail in the raised area, with my bag on the seat next to me. It's a pretty quiet train, not too many people on it, until we get to the convention center. I saw them up ahead. There was probably hundreds. You could tell that some of them were Midwesterners. Tucked in t-shirt with jeans. I would say the majority were Caucasian older males, late 70s, early 60s. It would have been a group of anything, teachers, electrical workers. They got on and every seat was taken. There was just a whole mob of people standing. I kind of want to bury myself in a hole at that point because my bag's on the seat. They don't seem to notice. There was a man holding on to the upper rails. I looked at the badge on his lanyard. Barbershop Harmony Society. I never saw the face of the guy who started to sing. It was kind of a deep, booming voice, that kind of feel of a New Orleans song, kind of a somber song, but for all I know, it could have been a happy song. I was in awe. I didn't even pay attention to the words. He goes on for about 45 seconds in the packed train. I guess they're thinking, is anybody else going to join in? And then, everybody joins in. The high and the low. It sounded cool, really cool, actually. That's why it was kind of surprising. If it was one person singing, it would have been like, okay, that's kind of weird. Maybe 2 stops later, they all got off. My dad always says that Oregon is a weird place. I've taken the Sounder after a Seattle Seahawks game, the subway from Yankee Stadium, the trolley from San Diego, but nobody's ever broken into song. It was nice. It was really nice. I didn't join in. I don't sing.
Yeah. Brilliant.
That was great. And that's our show.
There was a Tracy Ullman show episode.
Oh, yeah?
Where they're waiting at a bus stop. And Tracy Ullman starts singing from The Lion Sleeps Tonight. And then someone else comes up and starts singing. And after a while, everybody at the bus stop is singing.
Right.
The bus comes. Everybody gets on the bus except for Tracy Ullman. And she has pickpocketed everybody who had waited at the bus.
Yeah, that's great.
That's pretty good.
Awesome.
Well, that's our show. Thank you, Rob, for joining.
Yes.
You're welcome.
You can subscribe to our show at pdx.be/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@portlandafoot.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for Portland Afoot on iTunes and leaving a review. That's great. Or you can support the free service that we're giving you by getting our awesome 10-minute news magazine in the mail for just $14 a year at portlandafoot.org.
Can I pander?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you can join the Bicycle Transportation Alliance.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, especially if you're a bicyclist out there, and get discounts to every bike shop, for the most part, in the city of Portland and general area at btaoregon.org.
You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
And you can follow Portland Afoot on Twitter and Facebook, too. I'm Michael Anderson, your editor.
I'm Lillian Kerbake, your producer. Thanks for listening, and remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.
I don't need a car. I can carry my groceries or my laundry. I can even strap on my guitar. I don't worry about no traffic jam. I ride my bike on by the cars in a line. I don't worry about finding a parking space. I lock my bike to a no parking sign. I wish you all would get yourself bicycles and sell your cars before they make you broke. I'd like to see you smiling as you ride by and see the sunlight flash.